All right, everyone. Welcome to another live edition of Free For All. I am Big John, alongside my co-host here, Mr. Hody Johns. Hody, how you doing tonight?
Doing well. Have had a bit of a busy week, but I am so glad that instead of canceling yesterday, we just postponed it today because I needed some Big John to finish the week off.
There you go.
The perfect send-off into my weekend, and I can't go without it.
I appreciate the sentiment, but I would caution you on phrasing when you say stuff like that. But
said it the way I meant it.
There you go. But first of all, folks, yes, we are live tonight. One special Friday night appearance as opposed to our usual Thursday night slot. And that's because we had some double duty yesterday covering the first round of the NFL draft because here at Grumblings Media, yes, we cover it all, and sometimes live events take precedence, like the NFL draft, to which Hody, of course, contributed, talking about his favorite team, the Broncos. Hody, were you happy with the Broncos pick yesterday?
It's going to be exciting. It's not taking care of our most critical need, but it probably was the best player on the board, and it's somebody you can certainly use. I think we drafted a cornerback for whatever it's worth. And having already had Surtain and Moss, you might be like, well, I don't know. Here's the thing. Whenever Surtain or Moss were injured, we immediately became the worst defense in the NFL after being one of the best defenses in the NFL. So we had no depth there. But the other thing is the guy we picked up, he is so he's really – I guess I should stop calling him the guy we picked up. We just got Jahdae Barron. And he actually shifts into linebacker and safety and stuff like that. So the perfect part about this is if the offense starts getting squirrely and changing up plays or whatever, Surtain and Moss play the corners. This guy can just drop into linebacker or safety or whatever he's got to do or pick up.
He's a good hybrid. Yeah, he's a good hybrid player, yeah.
He's a good hybrid. Now, I think he will probably replace Moss as far as cornerback too for this team. And then Moss can kind of fill in that role. But, like, either way, just to have all those bases covered is fantastic. Obviously, our biggest area of need is running back. But I actually, and I said this before, I'm glad we didn't do that because running backs, the more – there's actually some money ball data here. The more you invest into your running back, the worse your team does. And I like the running back position. It's just the modern game, right?
Yeah.
You just want to pick up and get whoever you get. So the Broncos have, like, no running backs on the roster. Everybody was looking forward to maybe trading up and getting Genty or staying put and getting Hampton. But I think we probably did the right thing in terms of our team. If our running game is totally what undoes the team last year, maybe I'll be singing a different tune.
For sure.
But, okay. You know, now, you had a more exciting one. You're the Giants guy. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm a Giants. No, I was cool with my draft. We took Carter, which I was very happy with because I think he's a transformational player, basically. So I have to be happy with that. And I'm going to very quickly, if I can, I'm going to see if I can get my settings here so my notifications get turned off. Just heard a couple of dings. Life of me. Okay, here we go.
Ding, ding. I'll cover for you.
But that's okay. That's okay. But anyway, yeah, so the Giants did pretty well. I was happy that they traded up to get Jaxson Dart. Because I really didn't want Shedeur Sanders playing in Giants Stadium with all the wind and the horrible weather. I don't think he's got a strong enough arm for that. But yes, I'm happy with how the Giants did. And I'm glad for everyone. We even had some libertarian representation on the live stream last night of the draft, so I was happy to see that. But I want to remind everybody before we get on to today's topic. On Free For All, I want to remind everyone you're watching us here on Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. If you want to visit the website and check all our podcasts out, we got plenty of different stuff. Sports, as you found out now, we're just talking about it. We also got more political shows. We also do Liberty Lens with Mike Termott, where we focus on one issue. So everyone, go to grumblingsmedia.com and check us out there or follow us on X. At Grumblings Media, all one word, or any other social media platform. If you search for at Grumblings Media, one word, you'll find us there. All right, Hody, today we have an interesting topic. And in some ways, I'm personally invested in this. I know several people who are, and we'll talk about it. And I was interested, we're hoping we have a guest join us. That guest may or may not be showing up. It was a little bit up in the air. We hope she shows up, but if not, we can certainly soldier ahead. And what we want to talk about is this announcement made by the Secretary of HHS, RFK Jr. Let me give – I wrote this out, so I make sure I get it right, Hody. Let me just quickly read this paragraph, if you bear with me. RFK, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., as Health and Human Services Secretary, has launched an initiative to study autism, emphasizing environmental factors like toxins as potential causes. He announced this month, April 2025, the program aims to identify causes that he feels are environmental by September 2025, involving the collection of private medical records from various sources to create a comprehensive data set for research. This approach contrasts with the scientific consensus, which highlights genetics as the primary factor, with environmental influences being secondary and especially not linked to vaccines. So what we have here is an extension of what essentially provided Kennedy his initial notoriety in the early to mid-90s, and what initially lifted him up from, let's face it, a failure in terms of professional career, and elevated his legal career, being a representative for these types of cases, claiming vaccine damage and suing both manufacturers, I think, and doctors for these types, claiming that they were vaccine injuries when related to autism. Hody, I'll let you go. We kind of decided on this topic jointly here this week, so I'll let you take it away from there. What do you think of RFK and his announced initiative?
Hard to know where to begin. I have so many problems with it at a base level. So autism, the way we talk about it's really important, because when we're talking one in 31 people, that means everybody knows somebody who's got autism, some high functioning, some, you know, more challenging. And people's experiences are so important. I never want to discredit the challenge of somebody who's got a high challenge, you know, autism person in their life, a high degree. And I also don't want to hamper somebody who's, you know, some people are diagnosed with it very late, right? Like in life, and they made it through just fine, and that it doesn't define them. And right. You know, it's better to know, of course, because when you know, you know, the challenges that you may have overcome, you'd be like, oh, that's why I don't like loud noises or something like that. You know, to, you know, it helps you at different levels. So with this, I mean, it's literally called the spectrum, right? Autism right. spectrum disorder. And so within this spectrum, there's so many people whose experiences I want to be sensitive to. Now, RFK right. was, I think everybody will acknowledge, not sensitive when he talked about this issue. He generalized all of them. And then he said many, you know, won't use like the bathroom by themselves. But all of them, for example, wouldn't go on dates, wouldn't pay taxes, wouldn't something. So his announcement of it, it was rough. I'm going to get into his specific words later. I'll start with the exact initiative right now. This is going to be headed by David Greer, which tells you everything about the initiative.
Yeah, I want to sort of slow down because I think,
oh yeah, yeah, sure.
Because what's going to happen here is I think we're going to talk about a lot of stuff that'll seem disparate, right? We're going to talk about the initiative. We're going to talk about the people involved with the initiative. We're going to talk about RFK's contextualism when it comes to how he framed things, as you alluded to. So I want to slow down a little bit, and certainly for the folks out there who have any questions or righteous indignation at anything we say, by all means, hit us up in the chat, ask your questions, make your comments. There's nobody on this show who is insensitive to any of your questions, or anybody who thinks any question is too stupid or not appropriate or anything. So feel free, ask your questions. That's what we're here for. Hit us up on any of the major platforms, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X. Now, the reason to get back to his words, because let's start with that, because that's where the current, I think, outrage, offense, however you want to phrase it, has reignited, right? And Hody, you said you might have his exact words. So why don't we give RFK the benefit of the doubt? If you have it in front of you, give us some of the verbatim that you were referring to, not necessarily the whole speech, but the parts that you and others may have found insensitive.
Yeah, I'm going to be able to pull it up. Hang on.
Yeah.
I have it here real quick. It's right past me dunking on Kamala Harris. Here we go. So I'm just going to use his exact words. All right. So you said autism destroys families, but more importantly, destroys our greatest resource, which is our children. So one of the biggest issues I have with this is, now, obviously, has autism put a burden on families before? Of course, right?
Like, yeah.
That's just, certainly it's a burden. Does it put a burden to the point where somebody gets stressed out and they break up and fall apart? Well, I mean, when people marry each other in sickness and in health, right, this is part of the deal, right? So if you just say, like, well, I wasn't ready for that sickness, now, of course, there's some people that weren't. And some people whose stories will tell that you can understand why their relationship was burdened to the point where it fell apart. But is that more about, like, if you made that promise to be with somebody in sickness and health, you should have just been like, unless it's autism, right? Like, or something like that. Now, people don't say that. It's messed up, right? Like, I mean,
I do agree with you. And I see where you would say that. And in what may be the only instance of me doing what I'm about to do, I may have to defend RFK a little bit.
All right.
Not necessarily in his phraseology, because I think, like much of the Trump administration, he would have been served by a good speechwriter and perhaps a good PR person, right? Like a lot of this cabinet, not to diverge too much, a lot of this cabinet suffers from this, right? They think they're being truthsayers. They think they're being transparent. And a lot of times, to their own cause's detriment, they say the dumbest stuff you could possibly say. Now, I think, and to give him the benefit of the doubt, I think I know what RFK was talking about. And when you deal with either a child or a family member who has a pervasive condition that there is no cure for, at best, you have treatments to alleviate symptomology or behaviors. It's very, very stressful, and it's very, very taxing. Statistically, married couples that have a child with autism, their divorce rate tends to be higher than the national average, which is already somewhere near 50%. That's not speaking to intent. That's not speaking to effort. Or blaming anybody, certainly not blaming the person afflicted with autism. But it is a fact. And I think I know what he was trying to say. I think he was trying to say, this is a tragedy, and we don't have enough awareness of it to give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he was meaning to, and I certainly don't think he was trying to frame it from the perspective of the person with autism. I think he was saying, for the person who has autism, their support structure, their family, their friends, their schools, their programs, these can be very stressful. And with a lot of times, the general populace's ignorance of the condition, that this isolates you. It isolates you from family. It isolates you from friends.
Yeah.
So I think, give him, again, giving him the maximum benefit of the doubt, I think that's what he was referring to. So, to your point, you did say, and you're right, it is a spectrum disorder. I think, when my son was diagnosed in 1999, back then you had different types of diagnosis because they were more scattered, right? So you had something called PDD-NOS, which stood for pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. That's what that diagnosis was. That now falls. That doesn't exist anymore. According to the latest DSV. So that now is moved under the ASD, the autism spectrum disorder.
Yeah.
You had Asperger syndrome. A lot of people may have heard of Asperger syndrome. That really isn't a diagnosis anymore. That also falls under autism spectrum disorder. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of awareness of these things back as little as 25 years ago. I know that sounds like a lot of time to a lot of people, but it really isn't in the base of things. So I think I understand what he was trying to say. He wasn't referring to everybody in the current spectrum. So because certainly there's allegedly, I don't know, I don't think he is, but allegedly Elon Musk might be, say, what used to be called Asperger's syndrome. Certainly, there is conjecture that other famous people in history, historical figures, were on the spectrum, right? A lot of that you could debate, right? Is it trying to shoehorn somebody into a retro diagnosis in order to serve the cause, meaning more awareness and more funding? Maybe, I don't know. I can only deal with the here and now. And so I think that's what he was trying to do. I think he was referring to those people who have this diagnosis who require lifelong care and lifelong attention, the same way that someone with, say, who was confined to a wheelchair might say, hey, this person, we're not destroying their dignity at all. What we're saying is this person needs lifelong care. And I think that, in his own clumsy way, is what he was trying to refer to. Now, I understand what you're saying, too. And like I said, probably would have been better served having a professional speechwriter, having somebody whose number one condition for employment wasn't loyalty to the president, but rather someone who understood what their job was. I think he would have been better served. But in this particular case, I will not fault him for malice in that particular statement. But that's me. But, you know, I think it comes off weird. You know, I get it.
Yeah. Well, and so the issue I have, and we're going to get into some stuff that he says here, and I am fine with kind of these first two clips, which are the highlight clips, of trying to give him the maximum benefit of the doubt and just be like, maybe he forgot to say the word many except for this one instance, and maybe he just was speaking clumsily or something. But we're going to get into some parts where it crosses from misspeaking to downright lies. And so this is kind of the problem, right? So to provide an example, if I were to be like, hey, the Jews murder a lot of people and commit genocide.
Right.
You would be like, time out, right? Like, so what he's doing is he's saying something that is bigoted, but we accept it because it's people who are autistic. They're too much of a minority, right? They don't have these big unity groups that protest and go out in streets and stuff.
Right.
And they don't have a singular voting bloc, right? And one of the studies is actually that they're kind of all over the place. They're very individualistic when it comes to voting. And so it's okay to say what he said and be that clumsy. But if he's like, you know, Christians eat babies, and, you know, you would be like, well, that's some Christians, of course, right? The fact that he gets away with it is something I don't like. And it's what he further goes on to say. I'm going to go ahead and get right into the second thing he says. This is the other big controversial thing that he said. These are kids who will never pay taxes. They'll never hold a job. They'll never play baseball. They'll never write a poem. They'll never go out on a date. Many of them will never use a toilet unassisted. Now, between these first two statements, I'll wrap them both up by saying the autistic people that I know in my life, and here's the thing, according to the data, about 39% are classified as having a mental impairment, and about 39% are at average or above average intelligence, right? So, you know, we all know somebody probably from both categories, right? But the ones that I know, regardless of where they're from, are so hypersensitive to the fact that they may have destroyed their families. They're very sensitive souls to this, right? And to say, like, you are destroyed. I mean, he says you're destroyed, right? He's telling them you're destroyed.
Right.
And he's telling them that he says the disease, right? But that it destroyed their families. They're already worried about that. They're already sensitive about that, right? So to tell them, hey, you destroyed your family, right? Your disease destroyed your family. That makes them feel bad. And so when they're told things like they'll never hold a job, never pay taxes, never play baseball. I mean, I could go line by line and just note that there's a professional baseball player. There's a person who pays their taxes, richest person in the world. People hold plenty of jobs. There are notable poets who are autistic. In fact, poetry and autism kind of go hand in hand based on some of the way the structuring works. And so it's just, this is inaccurate. It's clumsy. And I think, I mean, I can see your defense even for this one as well. Maybe he just forgot to say all, and he's just talking about the select children that he thinks are really the most disabled. But because of things we're about to talk about, I can't give him that. But I'll let you chime in on this specific segment, because this is probably the famous one.
I am with you 100%, by the way, to say that it was clumsy. And again, to be fair to him, He did later then come out, I think, on Sean Hannity's program. And again, he was being fed a lot by Hannity, don't get me wrong. But he did try to clarify his statements, saying, like, of course I meant, I didn't mean that everyone, you know, I think he felt the pushback. I would question why a lawyer would need that much coaching on how to speak properly and to put across the proper thing. Again, if I was given the maximum doubt, benefit of the doubt, I would say that he was probably, if I give him the, like, can you and I agree that as misguided as RFK is, in my opinion, I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he has malicious intent. I think he's misguided about things. I don't think he's malicious. And if I give him the benefit of the doubt that he cares about people, I could easily see where he may have visited a family that has someone with autism that's not, and to be honest with you, I don't even know what the right phrase is, because in my lifetime and over my son's lifetime, the phrasing has changed, right? Whether you go with the politically correct advocacy groups or just parents, like if someone said to me 20 years ago asked me about my son, I would say, I have an autistic child. And then I was told by other parents that I was doing my son a disservice because I was putting the condition ahead of the individual. I never gave it that much thought, but in deference to the groups I found myself in, I would then say a child with autism, right? These things evolve, and those are language. But at the end of the day, I still view it as, how do you treat these people? How do you accept people that have this condition? And I'm venturing a guess, I have no idea, that he may have been introduced to a family or to individuals that are more severe autism. The nonverbal, for example, people that are nonverbal, people that have not comorbidities, but have other conditions that are not always associated with autism, but are sometimes very closely linked to autism, which include mental retardation. It includes sensory integration disorder, where, you know, we've seen the stereotypes in movies and things where, say, someone with autism, if you touch them, it really disorients them, and they get very aggressive or very disoriented. That you've heard the tragic stories of parents of kids with autism that can never hug their children, for example. My guess is that he may have been introduced to a family or two in that situation, and I'll give him the benefit of saying that he was moved by that. That made a very big impression on him, and that he may have been referring to those cases internally when he made that speech. Because if you haven't seen a family that unfortunately has had to always outfit their children, say, with a bike helmet, or have literally in their own homes have to pad rooms because their child will not be able to control their sensitivity to light or to sound. And their response to that is to lash out and hit up and bang their head or break windows or something like that. It's aside from being tragic for all the parties involved, if as an outsider, if you see it, even other family members who see this are extremely disoriented by that. And they're extremely made upset by that. Understandably so, by the way. Yeah. And if RFK walked into a situation like that or two, I could see where he would be almost traumatized by it if he had never been exposed to it. And if he had never been exposed to it after years of spouting his nonsense about vaccines causing autism or whatever, I could see where that was like that could be a transformational moment for him, you know? So that's what I'm – under the best of circumstances, Hody, that's what I'm hoping caused his misspeaking. And but to your point, I'm less concerned about that as a parent of someone with autism. I'm less concerned about that, and I'm more concerned about what he's going to do about it or what he proposes to do about it. And I think that's where, for me, the rubber hits the road. But and again, if anyone out there who's listening to us, if you have any questions at all for Hody or myself, or any comments, please feel free. Drop us a line. Whatever platform you're watching us on, we will be able to see it. If you have any questions at all, feel free and go ahead and ask us. Hody, I'll let you continue, though. I didn't mean to dominate the entire conversation.
All good. All good. I mean, I you know me. I like to let God judge hearts. I don't like supposing what's going on in his heart. All I want to do is, by their works you shall know them, right? Like, all I want to do is see what he does, and then I will judge based on these policies, these initiatives, these directions, and what's going on here. This is a guy who is, I mean, even apologized to somebody who he committed a sexual assault against, right? This is somebody who has, you look at his history, especially with, was it Mary Richardson, but like his second wife or whatever, barbaric, right? If you were to try to drive somebody to suicide, which is unfortunately what happened to her, you would do nothing different than what RFK did. I guess to his credit, unlike, you know, most people, he kind of admits to being a piece of junk. He says there's a lot of skeletons in his closet, and then they ask him about the sexual assaults, and he's like, yeah, I was no church boy or whatever. So, but it does shade, like, and even with his family history and Rosemary Kennedy, like, this is somebody who, while I won't judge somebody, there is a point where you would be like, I don't want you watching my child. And in this case,
yeah.
Has he committed things that makes me say, I don't want you in charge of Health and Human Services? I would say certainly from his history.
Well, I would too. You know. I would too. Yeah, yeah. We all know that. I think here's the thing, right? I think that if you have a discussion with anybody who's like a MAHA person or someone who's pro RFK, which, let's face it, a lot of libertarians, and I still don't understand this particular thing, to be honest with you, a lot of libertarians are big RFK supporters, even if they concede to you that he's not necessarily, quote, a libertarian. They'll say, yeah, he's a good guy, though. You know, he's challenging the orthodoxy. And I think as we go on this sort of conversation, I would ask people, it's okay to be skeptical. It's not okay to out of hand assume that because someone does challenge the orthodoxy is always on the wrong end of the stick on that one, right? There's a reason why, generally speaking, before the pendulum swung to this anti-science, anti-obvious fact environment we're in, there's a reason why things became rules of thumb. There's a reason why things became orthodox or part of the orthodoxy is because they've been proven to work. It doesn't mean not to be skeptical, and I certainly wouldn't take anybody's agency away from them, Hody. But, you know, look, certain things are certain things. Water boils at 100 degrees centigrade. You know, that's all there is. It freezes at 0 centigrade or 212 and 32 on the Fahrenheit scale, right? We don't have to keep testing that. There's a reason why we progress.
Yeah.
Things that have already been tested and proven, we don't have to endlessly, every generation, that's what separates us from the animals. We build on past learned experiences. So to that extent, that's all I'm asking of people. Just because RFK is against the system, he's against the evil pharmas, or he's against the American Medical Association or whatever, that is not reason to think that he's a genius. It's just reason to think that he doesn't accept what he's being told, for better or for worse. So just accept it for that. I mean, we've already seen him backtrack on some of his measles comments, right? We've already seen him backtrack on some of his things where he had to admit, look, the MMR vaccine really is your best defense against measles, mumps, and rubella. It's not letting everybody get sick and waiting for 20% to die so the other 80% are okay. Okay, so I think we've seen him backtrack, which seems to be very commonplace in the Trump administration, right? You make these bold statements, you kind of send out these feelers, and I don't necessarily mean President Trump. I mean everybody that's working for him. Yeah. Musk has done this with Doge, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, we cut out that Ebola program. Turns out we really needed it, so we reinstated it, right? It really, they seem to operate in this startup mentality. So, and you may appreciate that, not you or anybody. People may appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I just want people to keep that in mind. We're not, we don't hate on RFK because he's bucking the system. My being anti-RFK for this role that he's in is that seems to be his mantra. He's not just asking questions. That's the fallback of every conspiracy theorist. I'm just asking questions. Well, you know, some questions deserve to be taken more seriously than others. And that's where I'm coming from, Hody. I don't know if that's the – I know you mentioned his character, which is very big for you and for me as well.
Sure.
But specifically to his positioning and to his advocacies, that's my problem with it. It's like, you know, you discard tons of science to accept these minority or fringe. And you and I have heard it. The fringe one day becomes commonplace, right?
Yep.
But even in those cases, there's, I don't want to say a formal process, but there's a process by which that fringe becomes accepted, right? So, and I know you've got stuff to say, so cut me off, please. I'm gonna talk way too much, man.
But I like it.
Look,
I like
it. But here's the thing, right? There's a process by which you start to accept things and you stay away from what I would call very weak correlations, right? So the initial reason why vaccines were thought to play a part in autism, especially when the rates started to go up, is because of a very simple fact. It was a temporal correlation. That's it. And to the people, I don't know if you know what that is, Hody, you're a smart guy, but a temporal correlation means that two things happen close together. So if two things happen close together, you assume that one or the other was the causative agent, right? So when do most symptoms of autism begin to get diagnosed and begin to appear? Well, right around 18 to 24 months for most cases, right? My son was diagnosed even earlier than that. Well, in those cases, what was a major event that happened right around the same time? Vaccinations. So a lot of people initially said, well, let's look into vaccines. And you know what? From a purely research perspective, I get it. Why wouldn't you look into it? It's been looked into. At first, people thought it was the thimerosal. They thought it was mercury. Why? Because at the turn of the 19th century, you ever hear of something called Mad Hatter's disease? You ever heard of that phrase?
I have not.
Well, there was a phrase called Mad Hatter's disease, or mad as a hatter. If someone was acting wacky in society in the 30s, they'd say, in 1930, they'd say, he's acting as mad as a hatter. Well, that was from a real disease. It stemmed from, we later know, to be mercury poisoning. And why was the phrase mad as a hatter used? Because when people made hats by hand, those straw hats with the band and everything, there were a lot of mercury agents in the factory. And the people used to work with their bare hands. So the mercury would seep in through their fingers and eventually, in a lot of folks like that, not everyone, would cause what seemed like erratic behavior, quote-unquote crazy behavior that no one could really explain at the turn of the century. So they called them, they've gone mad as a hatter. And they used to, if you look at some early literature, it would say Mad Hatter's disease. Well, why was mercury, thimerosal, the preservative used in vaccines originally targeted? Well, it was because a lot of the symptoms of autism in a lot of cases mimicked some of the symptomology of Mad Hatter's disease. And guess what? There's mercury in the hats in the factories. There's a tiny little bit of mercury used as a preservative in early vaccines. So that was viewed. That was checked out. Turns out it wasn't the case. Then there were other theories. And believe me, my wife and I were through them all when we, you know, when you first, Hody, I don't know if you know this, but when someone's child gets diagnosed with a lifelong condition, as a parent, once you move past the devastation and the crying and the why us and, you know, that sort of psychological reaction, your next step is typically, especially if one or both of you is a scientist, is I want to find causes. I want to find treatments. I want to do my research, right? We went through it all. There was a theory for a while that it was some sort of heavy metal poisoning. If it wasn't mercury, it was some other heavy metal poisoning. Then for a while, there was something called the leaky gut theory, that perforation in the stomach lining led to bacteria getting into the bloodstream at very low levels, so it wouldn't cause sepsis, but it would make its way to the brain and blah, 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 blah. That turned out being wrong. Then people were prescribing gluten-free, casein-free diets, which is gluten-free, people understand it's present in wheat. Casein is typically found in milk products, dairy products. And there were people who swore if you went on this GFCF diet, it would cure your kid. It doesn't. It may alleviate some symptoms that were caused by gluten allergies, but that's about it. So you just come to the conclusion that something is happening. It's like, for those people that are like, ah, it's just crazy people getting their kids diagnosed, and, you know, the state is more than willing to diagnose people for funding and stuff like that. No, I don't believe that to be true. I think some of it might be true, you know, like a certain percentage might be true because, A, the methodology used to count, which I think you pointed out, is very important. Like, if in 1998, 99, when my son was diagnosed, everybody was getting diagnosed at 2 years old. Well, what happened to the 2 to 4 year olds? What about the ones who didn't have pervasive autism but started out with what's known as regressive autism, meaning they kind of hit their milestones developmentally until they hit 2, 3 years old, and then they started to regress and became autistic after that? Why is it that males are much more likely than females to have autism? It's not entirely sex-linked, but it's much more prevalent in boys than in girls. Is it linked to testosterone? I have no idea. And unfortunately, one of the toughest things for both researchers and parents to say is, I don't know. I don't know what caused this. Probably a combination of genetic and environmental. But I don't really think there's any connection to vaccines, which was RFK's, and still is to a large extent, RFK's position, that it's some sort of toxin, it's some sort of food additive. He targets vaccines, but I guess he's willing to see if it was red dye 40 or whatever he thinks this is going to show. And I think that's the problem. So I know you were going to continue, so I'll let you talk at this point because I've talked for more than my share of airtime right now.
That's okay. I'll enjoy my 15 minutes of fame here. No, yeah, no, go ahead. You know, when you got a lot to say, you got a lot to say. I appreciate it when you let me go on a roll. I am happy to let you go on a roll. That's just how it is. And especially because you've got some real skin in this game, in a very real sense here. And so I completely understand. So one of the difficulties, now that we're getting into it, I'll finish up on these last quotes because I can combine them into, and it's exactly what we're talking about. So just the last two quotes I have is, these are kids who, many of who, were fully functional and regressed because of some environmental exposure into autism when they're 2 years old. And then the last quote I wanted to provide with him was, we have to recognize that we are doing this to our children. We need to put an end to it. This is just flat out false. By his own data, is false. Correct. This is factually untrue. The levels in 2-year-olds to 4-year-olds is actually remaining flat. The only increase that we had actually in this last time to get from the 1 in 36 to the 1 in 31 is testing in 8-year-olds. And actually in the 8-year-olds, what happened is we are actually servicing underprivileged communities more. And there are, I don't want to bore the audience because it's probably, it's not too long, but it would take me probably like 3 full minutes to just read very boring data. But I'm just going to give you like one quote here. Prevalence in ASD among children 8 years old was higher in 2022 than previous years. ASD prevalence was higher among API, Black and Hispanic children aged 8 years than white children aged 8 years, continuing a pattern first observed in 2022. API, Black and Hispanic children aged 8 years with ASD were also more likely than white children and multiracial children with ASD to have a co-occurring intellectual disability. Identification by age 48 months was higher among children born in 2018 compared with children born in 2014, suggesting increased early identification consistent with historical patterns. They go on to talk about the underserviced communities. As these people are starting to get tested more, their rates are going up, of course. Where did it stay the same? Among white people who have always been getting tested. As you'll look at this data, and they have this awesome breakdown chart, you'll notice that we used to, in the 1980s, as I mentioned, 69% were considered intellectually, you know, impaired. And that's gone down. Now, is it that autism is suddenly less mentally impairing? Well, no. It's just we've recognized other people who have it. And so now all of a sudden, like Black communities and Hispanic communities, when they're getting expanded care, as was predicted, by the way, before this was predicted in this area, they're like, well, their numbers are going to go up because we've expanded care to these underserved communities. If you actually Alt-F and just search for the word underserved, you'll find these paragraphs that talk about this. Right. And you'll observe their rates go up, but they're, you know, obviously it's not more debilitating for them. It's the same autism in all of us, right? We're just kind of analyzing it in other communities. Now, we white people would be like, oh, this seems weird. Whereas, unfortunately, minority communities have been like, maybe I'm weird because I'm a minority. And it's a really unfortunate, but that's kind of part of the American experience, right, is making people feel bad about this stuff that really is just autism. Right. And it's okay to be like, hey, you're still a human being, you know? So when we are talking about this, let's see here. I want to talk about what autism actually is. It's a neurodevelopmental disorder characterized by repetitive, restricted, and inflexible patterns of behavior. So part of the difficulty when you test for this is that it's not just an intelligence test, although that is something they did in this, you know, in this study that they did. It's specifically, are these repetitive, restrictive, or inflexible patterns of behavior occurring not at the behavioral level, but at the neurological level and developmental. Now, here's the thing. Your brains develop until you're 20 years old. But 25. You do the majority of that building in the womb, right, and stuff like that. So can environmental factors play a role in autism and not just genetics? Yes, they can, because your brain is continuing to develop. Now, the bulk of it is, of course, genetics. When your brain is being put together, it's being given a map by your DNA and saying, right, here's how I'd like you to piece together the brain, right?
Right.
We did the nice chromosomes, and this is what this is the card we drew, and this is what we're going to build, right? We've got the blueprint, right, and we're going to go ahead and build it. So, of course, that's the bulk of it. And so what Kennedy is noticing here, something that the data specifically says is against his point, but there's some other environmental factor. Now, it's possible, because your brain is still developing, for this to happen. As you've mentioned with like the mercury poisoning or Mad Hatter's disease, it's worth examining environmental factors, right?
Absolutely.
Eating lead paint, of course, right?
Absolutely.
The problem is his suggestion of what it is flat out incorrect. He's also suggesting that these are kids, he says specifically, these are kids who are fully functional and go to non-functional between 2 and 4 years old, which is like a 0% rate. The people who are getting diagnosed at 4, who didn't, like it wasn't detected at 2, are actually having much milder symptoms because they didn't hit it as early, right? It wasn't obvious something was wrong with them.
Yeah.
So they are actually among the most mild of symptoms. It's the ones at 2 years old who, of course, common sense, right? Just knowing what this disease is, you know, or I don't want to say disease, I'm sorry, knowing what this disorder is, that's the key issue, right? And so he just has a fundamental non-ability to understand what autism even is. He is pushing an agenda for what it is, and he's intentionally misreading his data, which is why I said it makes it really tough for me to give him any benefit of the doubt here, because, I mean, if you read this, it'll take you probably about, I want to say, 30 minutes to read through the entire thing. But, I mean, 10% of it is it saying, yeah, here's why these numbers increased.
Just, yeah,
you know, and you have the, and they give you the data. So in case you want to disagree, go to the data. There you go.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. My giving you the benefit of the doubt ended after those first two paragraphs, meaning that I think the emotional, if he experienced emotional trauma witnessing any of these cases firsthand of the really severe cases, that's what I was given the benefit of the doubt about. Everything after that is 100% BS, and it's 100% the mind of a non-scientist, a non-clinician, and quite honestly, someone who doesn't understand data, talking out of his rear end. Now, I know he has defenders. I know that he's got people who will say, well, he's citing this one study by Dr. So-and-so who's got 20 PhDs and, you know, we've proven that silver is causing this or whatever. You know, I've had people send me studies and everything. Here's what I have to say. One of my data science mentors, because I don't know how many people know this, Hody, by profession, I'm considered a data scientist, right? Or I was at one point. So one of my data science mentors sent me, he caught an episode of Free For All once, and he sent me a chart. And if you see it, it's a typical scatter chart. If people know what that is, it's like when you look at your typical XY, there's all these dots all over the place, right? That's called a scatter shot, a scatter graph, right? And each point represents an XY coordinate, but it's not in the typical line or a curve. They're literally all over the place. And what you use those for is to assess population cultures is one of the reasons you have this visualization. And he goes, what people like RFK like to focus on is wherever there's a lot of data clustered together, they'll ignore that. And they'll find the one or two dots that are up here in the upper corner away from all the other dots, and they'll focus on those. Mathematically, statistically, just in terms of data analysis, those are anomalies. Okay? Now, they may be interesting to look at, but what you have to realize is those are anomalies. By definition, they're not happening 99% of the time. They're up here. There's a reason they're up here by themselves, right? Or down here, whatever the case may be, right? And I think that's the problem. You have people who will cite these things. And again, to someone who doesn't know anything, you could take any BS study and it looks impressive. They use big words. They throw a lot of chemical compounds in there. They'll use numbers. They'll use statistical analysis. Am I being elitist if I say that the overwhelming majority of people who are citing this as having done research couldn't understand it to begin with, Cody? Am I being elitist by saying that?
No, doing research is something that we're all expected to do, right? It's on our ACTs, data interpretation. This isn't an elite thing.
Well, what I mean by that is we've all heard of the 10,000-hour rule, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that, the 10,000-hour
rule? Yeah, that's how long it takes to be an expert on a subject.
Right, that's a Malcolm Gladwell, one of his many, you know, little catchphrases, right? So you have this 10,000-hour rule, and for the most part, it's fairly accurate, right? When did the internet become a 10,000-hour expert on everything? And that's my beef, right? Like, we've all become experts on voter fraud. We've all become experts on autism, on how the CIA works, on everything, right? And look, it's fun to sit there and pontificate. And if you're good with the gab, Hody, you put your podcast together, you hope a couple of people watch it, and you get retweeted on X and everywhere else, right? But the truth of the matter is, there comes a point where you have to be honest with yourself. And you have to be willing to say, I don't understand. And I know as libertarians especially, we don't like to admit that. And we don't like to think that maybe, just maybe, there's people who happen to work for the government who are good people, who have all the good intentions in the world, who actually thought working for the government was the best, most efficient way to help other people. You and I may disagree with that premise, right? We may think that the government, and we do, we may think the government is the worst place for caring people and for one thing or the other. But at the end of the day, you know what? There's a lot of dedicated scientists. There's a lot of dedicated doctors, nutritionists, environmentalists, whatever you want to call them, who actually don't wake up every morning, head to the lab or head to the office and say, how can I advance the deep state today? Right? They're not doing that. They're waking up and say, I have a job to do, right? I have to collect data so I can see if there's a trend in here that I could take to the guy who's looking at population genetics or you know, like the cancer researcher that says, I've got like 20 Petri dishes to swab today and grow them in my big oven. I forget the name right now. And I have to grow them in there and I have to look at the results and then I have to take those results and test them against this series of antibiotics, right? That's what my wife does for a living, right? So when you have that sort of thing, is RFK the one who is almost single-handedly making these decisions? Because I can almost guarantee you there's no preponderance of evidence. There's not a line of neurologists and childhood developmental experts who are lining up at his door saying, make sure nobody takes those vaccines. That's not happening. Nobody's breaking down his door for that. Yes, there's a handful of people. And if I am to give them the worst of intentions, there's a bunch of grifters who are lining up using pseudoscience to push this narrative. You want to look for potential? Because I told you, I think it's like 80% genetic, 20% environmental. And again, that's my own unscientific gut feeling. And if you ask me how I came at that number, I just told you, it's a gut feeling. I haven't done any research. I don't claim to be but that's my feeling, right? Because it can't be entirely genetic in my view, the way I reason it, because where are the autistic or the 80-year-olds with autism? Where are the 70-year-olds with autism, right? I get it. See, so something has happened. Now, is that something reduction in oxygen in the atmosphere? Is it the increase in electromagnetic lines that circle up everyone's house? Is it, I don't know, is it something to do with food? Is it that, generally speaking, in developed countries where we do see the incidence of autism rise the most, is it that in developed countries women are putting off childbirth till later in their life? Maybe is that something to do with it? I don't know. But there is something that's changed, I think, in the last 30, 40 years that you can't attribute solely to genetics. Is there a genetic component that makes you more predisposed to whatever environmental difference there is? I think ultimately that's what it'll prove to be. Just like cancer, right? We've all heard the thing, oh, my grandpa used to smoke six packs of Pall Malls a day, never got sick in his life, and he lived to be 90. Or, you know, my grandmother ate a dozen eggs every morning, never had a problem with her cholesterol, right? Yes, we get it. But for the overwhelming majority of people, if they did either of those things, they would either get lung cancer or they would die of a clogged heart valve, right? So it's also a probability game too, right? So I think you have to take that into account when you talk about these things, which I don't think RFK does. But let's talk about, and again, you're going to have to put up with me because I'm going to go off on rants on this for short bursts.
Good.
So as soon as I get done, I'm going to take a breath and say, Hody, move on to the next thing about what we want to talk about. So let's do that right now.
Sure.
By the way, before he starts, listen, if you guys think I'm nuts, if you think I'm oversimplifying it, if you just think I'm full of BS, please let me know, and let me know your opinion. Get on the chat wherever you're watching us, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X. You can hit us up during the show live. Like I said, no opinion will be discarded. As long as you're not filthy dirty in your comments, we'll read them. We'll answer them to the best of our ability. But go ahead, Hoster.
There's a healthy balance between elitism and anti-intellectualism, and this is something that we really need to stress because in America, we know of when all the scientists were eugenicists, right? Like, just if you weren't on the eugenics wagon, you weren't a respected scientist, you know, you were rejecting the facts and everything like that. And it was appropriate to chastise them for that, right? And to just say, like, hey, listen, we might not have 10,000 hours it takes to become an expert, but I'm not going to sterilize my black neighbor. You're like, you know, that, I'm sorry. Like, this again, the by the works ye shall know them thing, right? Like I know black families. The reason it was defeated was simply you could observe how wrong they were, regardless of what they said, right? We observed black people be educated. We observed them be, I mean, and I don't want to just say blacks because, I mean, they did this with Irish people. I mean, they did it with Jews. They did this with people with autism, right? They did this with all kinds of different people the eugenics movement touched. And we just kind of said, like, but I know people who are great, who are wonderful people, and they deserve to have families and kids, and you know, they deserve to live, you know, they deserve to exist, right? Curing them means killing them in this case. And, you know, if RF Kennedy, as he says, wants to cure autism, you will literally have to kill people to do that. At the moment, there's no other way around that. Now, I don't think he means that, and I will grant him that. I may not think much of his character. I will say I don't think he's proposing a genocide. I think he has a crony agenda with some of his donors, and it benefits them to have people not vaccinated against certain things so that they can prescribe their stuff. I mean, it's, you know, the businesses that have invested in him make me know that that's what this is. But so I want to be careful because I don't want to say, like, you all need, because I don't have 10,000 hours worth of work on in autism, right? All I know is the by their works ye shall know them thing. This is why it was such a betrayal when we had people who had put all that time saying the world's going to end in be underwater in 2005, right? Like, that you're just like, well, that's a real betrayal now, because while I do believe in global warming, look what you make me defend now. I have to, from my uneducated self, hope that you, some element of what you were saying was true, right? And, like, it didn't happen. It's not underwater. I can point to these biomes that are dying out, but that's sensationalism, right? Because you were inaccurate. Even if I'm on your side, you used bad facts. This is why I really want to see people who actually might even be supportive of RFK correct him, to be like, you're speaking inaccurately, and that's going to bite us, right? Like, that's the problem here. So to move on to this next subject, and this goes into how he plans on dealing with it, is this when it's appropriate to talk about David Greer?
let's go. I was going to say, let's talk about – so I'll tee it up and you can talk about it. So David Greer is someone that RFK has asked to lead this study. Now, part of the study is going to be collecting data, which a doctor, and I can never pronounce his name, Bhattacharya, that he's put in charge of NIH. Dr. Bhattacharya, is that how you pronounce it? Bhattacharya?
Anyway. I just saw him today. I know who you're talking about. Yeah. I remember seeing the name.
Honestly, I have no real feelings about that guy one way or another, but apparently he's really good at data collection, data analysis. And one of the things that in itself is kind of sketchy is they want to create a registry for autism data. Now, as a scientist, I could be like, yeah, the more data I have, the better, right? As a data scientist, the more data I have, the more quality data I have, the better. I don't like this thing about we're going to go to all the pharmacies, try to figure out which patients have autism, which prescriptions they're using. First of all, there's a lot of off-label use in the autism community. So a lot of that stuff is not going to be consistent, right? The medication that my son takes is not going to be the same as the medication for someone else. Why? It's a spectrum disorder. What works for one won't work for the other. And they're going to try to collect other things, Medicaid records and things like that. Not once did I hear them say that they're going to tap into the voluntary databases that parents have filled out. Like my wife and I filled out voluntary questionnaires for specific research efforts that are associated with either universities or other organizations that we feel we're comfortable giving that information to. And that might be on their agenda, Hody. I don't know. But anyway, they're picking this guy, David Greer, who was hired by HHS to play a significant role in collecting the data and to make recommendations. Now, I think also people, let's talk about David Greer, but people have to also understand, when someone says we'll have a cure or an understanding of this disease by October of this year, that in itself is pure insanity. That should tell you everything you need to know. People have been working on this for 40 years, longer, going back to the late 50s. And you think you're going to get it done in 6 months? Because why? There's only one reasonable answer to that. And again, even if this wasn't what he meant, Hody, this is where he would have been better served by a speechwriter. The only conclusion I can draw when you say I'll have resolution by October is because you already have the answer you want. You already know what you're going to say in October. This is a dog and pony show to lend some, quote, scientific credibility to it. So that's the first problem I have. You should have said we're kicking off in April, and we'll see how long it goes. We're going to stay at this till we defeat it. That's a different statement than we're going to do this till October, then we'll have an answer for you. That's nuts. No self-respecting scientist or anybody who's being advised by a scientist would ever make that statement. This isn't like a software engineer where you know you've got definable goals that are completely under your control. This is not that. This is a life science. It's different. And to that end, he hired somebody that we may have some issues with. Talk to us about David Greer.
So David Greer, there isn't much to say about him other than hack to the extreme. His father may be more famous, like Mark Greer. Yeah. I think his Wikipedia will even redirect you to his father, but he worked with his father. So, you know, kind of tomato, tomato a little bit. He and his dad, Mark, David is the one who is going to be on this initiative that you reported that has a due date. Like you said, that is bananas to me, but you covered that. For the CDC prevention study. And it's his job to revisit that. So first of all, he's revisiting a study we already have. The data's there. You and I have talked about it. It's available for anybody to read. It does not take long. If you want to scroll past all the, here's what we saw, you can do that and just read data. You can even go back to the 2020 post, which looks exactly like this. Just replace the word 2022 with 2020, and you'll go back that far. David Greer was fined by the Maryland regulators for practicing medicine without a license. He prescribed Lupron to autistic children. Lupron is the chemical castration drug we give to sex offenders. So for all the anti-trans community that was like, they're castrating our children, this guy is literally castrating your children, giving them the drug that does that. His work is so short because he's not allowed to practice it, right? So it's hard to be like, here's all the medicine he does. He's had his license revoked, I believe, in every single state, or like preemptively revoked, right? Like to just be like, no, you're not going to practice here. Now listen, as you mentioned at the top of this show, that could be somebody who says something unpopular and the system's just fighting against him. The trouble is the data is not on his side. So,
right.
The phrase "do your own research" I don't really love because we kind of can't, right? Like it's like I can't conduct this test, but we should read the research for ourselves. And here's the problem: when you look into something by David Greer, and you should click on any little links he cites. First of all, there's not many of them, but secondly, sometimes they'll even say the opposite of what he tells you it says. I mean, he's just misinterpreting data. On purpose, right? Like, and you might say, well, how does he exist? Well, it's actually really easy. When you are sponsored by, it's funny, for as anti-pharmaceutical as they come, when you're sponsored by other pharmaceutical companies who treat diseases, vaccines are a huge problem for them, right? So they want people taking, you know, not getting these vaccines so that they get these diseases so that they can administer their cures, right? Like I guess it's not a cure, but their pain management, their, you know, the way that they would manage these diseases. Right. And so, you know, Greer, this is the equivalent, the best equivalent I can give to this is like saying we're going to look into nuclear energy and putting like a hardcore hippie, like abolish all nukes guys in front of it and just be like, this guy is going to objectively try to figure out, you know, if nuclear energy is safe and we'll go from there, right? Like, it's just so patent. Like, you would only put this guy, I mean, this guy shouldn't be in charge of anything. This guy's not qualified to be a family doctor, literally in any state. But this is the opposite of a person you want to look at a study and prescribe something to talk about the environmental factors went into this. Even if you like, let's just say you fully believe that he's right and vaccines are causing all these things. Okay, but don't you want somebody non-biased to come to that conclusion? Wouldn't that be like, oh, wow, I looked into the data. Sure enough, it's all these vaccines that are right, right? Like, give me somebody unbiased who's genuinely interested in science.
Right.
To lead this kind of thing. Instead, you chose somebody who's heavily biased as well as not allowed to practice medicine because of all of the hacky stuff they did because they gave chemical castration drugs to little kids with autism instead of providing them like real help. I mean, this is where we get into, oh, so your works are showing us who you are on this one. Right. Like, and that's all I got to say about that.
I agree with you and I share your outrage that this guy would be in charge of anything. He's clearly a grifter, in my opinion. His studies have all been discredited to everybody except apparently RFK. And this is where, again, if you go back to my sort of analogy with the scatter chart, this is RFK saying, man, this guy is he must be onto something because they've banned him from everything. He's not allowed to practice medicine. He can't call himself a doctor. He must be awesome. And it's that type of nonsense, which I hate to say this, but a lot of us libertarians share that belief. Like, you see it in a lot of expos, Hody. Well, this agency is against him. This establishment is against him. He must be onto something good. No, that's not always a foregone conclusion. Do you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, if you really believe what you'd say, you go to your mechanic to take care of that tumor in your head. But you don't, right? You go, you go to some sort of doctor. Why are we picking a guy who's been disqualified from practicing medicine? At best, he's a hack data analyst, at best. And you're putting him in charge of policy now? How about this? Even if you had some metadata that may have shown some temporal causality or some adjacent causality, wouldn't you want then to pass that data over to, say, a biochemist or a neurologist or some other biomedical researcher to say, okay, you think you're onto something. For this to have any value whatsoever, we have to understand the chemical pathways, the variances, the comorbidities, like a lot of the stuff that in some cases libertarians were rightly saying, hey, a lot of this stuff didn't go through the proper testing with, say, the COVID vaccines. why not apply that to this hack? And I don't know if it's just my bias with my personal situation or my background, my family's background in research, to sit there and say, like, some hack is just going to put data points together and come up with something, and he's guaranteeing they'll have it by October, when the rest of the world, as if they have no vested interest in finding some sort of relief for all the people that are impacted by this situation. Instead of saying that, you're like, we'll have an answer for you. And you'll love the answer, because it'll be, don't take any vaccines. It'll be, let's get the food coloring out of our food. We're going to force everyone to eat organic. We're going to prevent people on SNAP from drinking soda. That'll cure autism. I say it facetiously, Hody, but I wouldn't be surprised if all of that plays into it. And unfortunately, what are you going to do? I've had people on X tell me, well, you're so against RFK because you're afraid of finding out that you're the one who caused your son's autism. No, I'm not afraid of that. Trust me. I'm 60. I'm way beyond that. That's not my cause here. My cause is when you sell enough snake oil to people that it then becomes to the detriment of the most innocent among us, the people who can't advocate for themselves. See, if he was selling snake oil to adults who reasoned their way through it and their lives were not at stake, it was just a matter of, like, extracting money from their pockets, that's deplorable, but I wouldn't care as much. I'm being honest with you. But when you're dealing with children, when you're dealing with the most vulnerable about us, and because of the way these things work, again, you could argue whether the government should be involved in any of this, but to the extent that they are, why are you diverting resources that could help people from real research to, again, hop on something that the overwhelming majority has said there's no relation. It's been fully debunked. And I think part of the problem here, Hody, is that we don't have a viable replacement answer. And I think that's the gap here. Like I told you, I'm okay with saying, I don't know. Because when you say, I don't know, that means I got more work to do. When you don't know and you say, I think it's this, and you kind of leave it like that, you're doing everyone a disservice. And I think that's the danger with RFK. I consider him to be a charlatan. I consider him to be a charlatan. And I want to be very clear about that. I consider him to be a charlatan. But for those that don't, I would just say, how's he made your life better? If you have a person who is on the spectrum in your life, has organic food made them any better? Has, I don't mean to sound rough on this one, but I mean, one of the things, so again, to share a little bit, we found the most effective treatment for my son to help him integrate into society a little bit better was behavioral work. Something called ABA, Applied Behavioral Analysis. And part of that sort of approach is massive amounts of data. Massive. Like, we stopped when my son hit 21 at that point. But up until the age of 21, my wife, there's a place in heaven specifically for her. Binders like you wouldn't believe. Our house was, from the floor to the ceiling, binders of data. Just handwritten data, taking graphs on everything, eating habits, recreational habits, toileting habits, dressing habits, language. My son is largely nonverbal, but slowly and surely we've built him up to be able to at least talk and express himself. And he's got about a 500-word vocabulary now, and it's growing by the day. That took a lot of hard work. I'm not saying that to make myself or my wife sound better. It took a lot of talented therapists, teachers, family members, everyone pitching in. It really is a community effort. And to us, when you look at that data, everything we ever tried, GFCF, heavy metal chelation, anything, ineffective. Ineffective. And that was not me guessing that it was ineffective. Because when you're a parent and you have a child that you feel you need to help, you're susceptible to making up things that aren't there, to seeing a ray of hope where there may not, unfortunately, be any. And the way you get around that is by taking the data. You have a stopwatch. You have a little clicker that counts a behavior. And that's why I think a lot of people don't see this, that are not exposed to this. I don't think they appreciate what's involved in it. If I can draw an analogy, we can all commiserate with people who suffer from Alzheimer's. We can even perhaps sympathize greatly and feel very, very sorry for people who have to act as caretakers for people who are suffering from Alzheimer's. And intellectually, we can understand that. But until you see someone who is fully dedicated to taking care of someone who cannot otherwise take care of themselves, then you start to understand what it really is. I hate to put it in that experiential Douglas Murray type of fashion, right? But there is a little bit to that where you say, like, I can intellectualize that it must be rough that your entire day is spent taking care of someone else. There's no such thing as a weekend. There's no such thing as a vacation. Because, hey, people have said to me, you haven't taken a vacation in 30 years, or you never leave your house. Well, guess what? Autism doesn't take a vacation. Autism never leaves my house. Therefore, I cannot. People think I'm being overly dramatic. Put yourself in that situation for even a week, and you'll see what I mean. I'm not saying this to make you feel sorry for me. I'm just letting you understand, not you, Hody, but anybody who might be listening.
Yeah.
That's the situation a lot of parents, a lot of caregivers are confronted with. And to have someone come out and say, maybe it's your fault, maybe it's your child's fault, maybe it's your brother's fault, maybe it's your parents' fault, and they're destroying your lives. No, that's not the case. And for you to intimate that and to then say, and by the way, in October, I'm going to tell you that it was due to vaccines. In October, I'll tell you that it's because you're not feeding your kid the correct food. Why? Because that's part of my MAHA agenda. That's part of the reason. And I know there's going to be a whole parade of MAGA and MAHA idiots who will get on social media when this gets announced in October. We'll see. See, that's what I voted for. Because they're doing it now, right, with everything. That's what I voted for. We got a judge arrested. That's what we voted for. Right? We're deporting millions of people. That's what I voted for. We finally decided that autism is due to vaccines. That's what we voted for. That's not what you get to vote for. You don't get to vote on whether vaccines cause autism. It's not up for a debate. It either does or it doesn't. And the preponderance of evidence is that it does not. It does not. You go to Grok, the most pro-right-wing AI out there. You go to Grok. You type in what causes autism. It says, we don't know, but here's the one thing we do know. It's not due to vaccines. Right? So I think if I can make a personal plea to anyone out there, I'm not asking you to believe what I believe. I'm asking you not to automatically be anti what the orthodoxy is telling you in every case. And libertarians, especially the hardcore ones, the Mises folks, the old school Mises folks, the libertarians, the MAGA in libertarian clothing, those kind of folks, stop being anti-government and be pro-liberty. And part of that is going to be not this reflexive knee-jerk reaction that anything the government tells you, anything the pharmaceuticals tell you, anything doctors tell you, the AMA tells you is necessarily wrong. Get away from that. The pendulum has swung too far over to the other side now. We used to believe everything they told us. Unfortunately, the pendulum has swung that now we believe nothing they tell us is true. And the death of expertise is a real thing. The death of expertise is something that we're generally, we have to learn to somehow deal with, Hody, but especially in this area. When it comes to health, when it comes to medicine, when it comes to stuff that you can't research on your own. Like you said, you're not going to do this research. You personally, with all the good intentions and as big a heart as you have, can you do a statistically significant survey? You can't. It's impossible. You need hundreds of people to conduct that with resources and labs and data centers and the whole nine yards. You can't do it, even if you wanted to. And I would venture, and if you told me, Big John, I want to do that. I want to start out tomorrow doing this research. I would believe you. Trust me when I say I know you, in your heart you would mean it. I would also tell you, Hody, find yourself a group to join, because you would not be able to do it yourself. I wouldn't be able to do it. Nobody would be able to do it themselves. People can lead it. People can push it ahead, but that's it. Sorry, again, that's another rant on my part, but you know, that's my concern. I really wish people would stop with the knee, like, RFK is great because he hates the establishment. I have a different opinion about RFK, and great wouldn't be the adjective I would use. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah. As I say, Fauci lying doesn't make everybody else tell the truth. Right?
Exactly.
Like, he did lie. Like I'm sure, right? Under oath and everything, right? Like, I've got real problems with him, and I don't want to even downplay those, because at the height of that, I would have had a show just like this, Big John, about the things that some of the experts were saying about the vaccines that weren't true, right? Like, I mean, it just, Utah even had an advertisement on TV saying it was, and I kid you not, but quote, perfectly safe, unquote. And so when everybody says, nobody ever said they're perfectly safe, nope, government advertisement on TV, like literally .gov advertisement on TV. So like, the thing is them being wrong or doing something bad doesn't mean the opposite is right or true. The conspiracy theorists are gonna take advantage of this. I just finished this book, and you know how much of a bookworm I am.
Right.
The Quiet Damage. It's about QAnon and the destruction of five American families and the toll that it played in there. And a lot of what they preyed on are people who were in pain. And I kind of want to – I know we're approaching time here, and so I just want to, before we are done with this – the bulk of the libertarians that I've seen trying to defend this, they're like, sure, he lied, and sure, he's – messed up the data and said things that were kind of dumb or whatever. Like, he's stupid, and I understand that. But why are you upset that he's trying to do something, right? Like, he's just – at least it's something, right? At least it's something. So I do want to talk about, like, libertarian solutions for this, because people are in real agony. And if we don't fill that with some kind of solution, they're going to turn to this crap. Right? Like, they are going to turn to this because they're hurting so badly, right? And I think one of the issues that I have with stuff like this is, instead of filling, like, RFK is filling this real void, but he's picking a guy saying, hey, can you reinterpret their data? Like, his assignment is not to even conduct a new study. It's to look at this data that's already been done. The data says within it the results, but of course this guy's going to come to whatever conclusion his cronies want him to come up with. You know, it's David Greer. We know what he's going to come up with, you know, and then that's going to be the results, you know. But people are going to look at that and they're going to say, that's hope though, right? That's hope. We want to combat autism. We want to make sure there's less, right? Sure. I get that, right? We don't want people with neurological development disorders, you know, well, we want those people, but we want to help their neurological development, right? We don't want that abnormal development making them, you know, resisting the teachings that we try to teach them. So you mentioned that's so tough. But we could be conducting a study with the same money, with actual experts, to say, like, hey, listen, maybe let's figure out how we can make them verbal, right? Like, if they're resisting verbal communication, there's ways to communicate that are nonverbal,
that have had
remarkable successes. These are studies that have kind of been dipped a toe into, that they're having successful treatments with autism in other countries. And we're struggling to push that barrier down here in America, right? And all of a sudden, instead of telling your son, hey, now there's a, you know, pharmaceutical company to burn down or something, you're saying, hey, listen, you and your son, maybe there's a color technique that'll help them speak a little bit better, right? That will help you communicate to them better. We have to fill that with some kind of hope. So, yes, I'm the anarchist. I'm the burn it all down, destroy it, whatever kind of guy. But if I am RFK and I'm a minarchist, whatever, libertarian, I'm going to use the resources that I have. I'm going to use them wisely. I'm going to fund real studies. I'm going to get rid of these subsidies that are into stuff that people are worried about, you know, and I'm going to give people all the information that they deserve to have. Filling it with misinformation is the problem that I have with RFK Jr., because it's getting people who are hopeless a false hope. And I can't think of much more destruction, like many things more destructive. But I did want to turn this to you, because obviously you've thought about what kind of help you need a lot more than what I have, you know?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, though. I think at the crux of the matter is exactly what you said. So you asked for libertarian solutions. One of the solutions is free up people's resources. The other thing is understand that a lot of times the way autism is treated, and I use that in quotes, I'm just doing it shorthand now, I don't mean to insult anybody, is through the educational system. So initially it's not a medical issue. Initially it's an educational issue. People have to create individual education programs, IEPs, that they take to their school board. Their school board has to approve it. Then the children can start getting specific help in terms of education, behavior modification, behavior curbing. So when you say, how do kids learn to communicate? Well, some do sign language, and they need to go to class for sign language. Others have assistive devices where you have a picture of what you want, you press it on an iPad, and the iPad will say something like, I want a donut, or I need bathroom, or something like that. Because a lot of kids on the spectrum suffer from something called apraxia, which means their brain can formulate the word, but it can't translate and come out vocally. So there, imagine how frustrated you'd be, Hody, if you could think of something and never be able to verbalize it. An analogy I used to tell people is, let's say you're a professor of English here in the United States and someone drops you in the middle of Beijing and there's no one to translate for you. Boy, would you be frustrated. You couldn't talk to anyone really, right? You'd have to figure out other ways of communicating, right? People with autism on the spectrum have that problem every day. So one thing is free up funding. Break the bonds of that, you know, Board of Ed. When my son's IEP was drawn up and you talked about underserved community, I've got two anecdotes to tell you and hopefully it'll help you real quick. One was when we went for the IEP, we were the first or second family and when you go for these things, it's heartbreaking because you'll see, I'm not exaggerating, in New York City, if you go to a public school for these hearings, you'll see maybe 50, 60 families queued up in a hallway waiting for their turn. And their turn might be anywhere from half an hour to an hour long. Okay, so you see all these families there. And in a melting pot, a lot of them don't speak English very clearly. A lot of them are not very well educated, or at least some of them aren't. There's no accommodations made. Some of them can't afford an IEP attorney. I was fortunate. I hired an attorney to come with me. When we went into the program, every opportunity, it's a zero-sum game with school boards. If they gave you something, they got to take it from someone else. So I went in there and I was like, my son needs speech therapy. My son needs this. My son needs that. Naively, I went in saying, why don't you guys just rebate me like I'm in some Bangladeshi bazaar. I'm trying to negotiate with them. I'm like, why don't you give me what I pay for my school taxes, and I'll supplement the rest for whatever my son needs. No, sir, it's all or nothing. And I was like, excuse me, it's all or nothing, or else you get nothing from us. Wow. We keep your school taxes, and then you got to go private.
Great.
Okay, fair enough. My lawyer was a vicious shark. They ended up paying four times as much for my son's appropriate education, and that's the key word. I left that thing saying I thought I had won. And, Hody, I'm not too ashamed to tell you, as I walked back out that hall and I saw all those families that I knew did not have attorneys with them, that I knew had trouble with the English language, I started crying on the way out. My lawyer said, what's the matter with you? We got everything we wanted. And I said, it's costing each and every one of them now. They're not going to be able to provide for those parents will not be able to provide for their children. And my attorney turned to me and said, John, you can't think like that. You can't. You have to look out for your son first and foremost. He goes, trust me, I understand. You feel bad. You're at the beginning. This is a 20-year process right now. Move on. I'm telling you, I came to a complete halt, and I literally had to put my hand in my face in my hand because the realization of what was happening hit me. That's something you needed to understand right away. I ended up every year of my son's education until he was 21. I ended up suing the state of New York. Half those years ended up in the New York State Supreme Court. I was fortunate. I had the means to do that. Think of all the people who did not, who were dependent on the school system. Now, I know there's going to be hardcore libertarians out there that say, get rid of the school system. Sure. Okay. I could agree with you on that. But is the reality that we're getting rid of it tomorrow? No. The reality is that as you fight towards your ideal, we have to deal with this in the here and now. There's people's lives at stake. because any child, any person with autism that doesn't get the help they need at a younger age, as you said, while the brain is still forming, Hody, it becomes that much more difficult when they're adults. And that becomes a bigger problem, not for necessarily for the person on the spectrum, but also for the people around him as well. So anyway, so that's one anecdote for people to keep in mind. And one libertarian solution is understand there were people who didn't know what autism was when my son was diagnosed. They kept on his IEP, their initial thing would be to put down mentally retarded, MR, or ED, emotionally disturbed, because he would have outbursts. And we said, no, it's a neurological issue. And we found ourselves, my wife and I found ourselves in the position of having to educate the people who made these decisions as to what autism was. Instead of what you might think would be the case, which is them educating us and trying to help us out, which you might think might be the relationship, or even a back and forth, it was literally we had to sit down and explain to them. And we had to have expert witnesses, doctors, neurologists, behavioralists, everybody come in. See, that's why when some people, I say sometimes you just have to go through it. I don't mean to sound like Douglas Murray. If you haven't been to Gaza, you can't talk about Gaza. I don't mean it like that. I mean it for that empathy, for that connection. If you saw what parents sometimes have to go through with very small children, young children on the spectrum, you would start to realize it's not as easy as, oh, somebody's expanding the definition or the diagnosis. The second, and this one's more upbeat, I promise. We'll end on this little anecdote. My son was nonverbal up until he was 6 or 7 years old. No matter what we did, couldn't get him to utter a sound. And we just resigned ourselves to he's either going to have to learn sign language or he's going to have to use an assistive device, an iPad or something. And one day, and this is, again, when you talk about the strain on families, my wife would wake up at 4 a.m. to go to her job. She's a microbiologist. She would take the early shift at the lab. She would leave the house at 5 a.m. At 6 or 7, I would wake up, drive a 2-hour commute, drive my son to a private school where he would get his program, appropriate program. I would then park my car, if you're a New Yorker, in Brooklyn, take the subways into Manhattan so I could be at my desk to do my job at 10 a.m. My wife would then get off work at 2 or 3. She would drive the 2 hours into Brooklyn, pick up my son, and bring him back because no transportation was being provided because he was out of the school system. That went on every day for 7 years. If you could think of the strain on a marriage where you don't see your spouse for 7 years, essentially, and like you get no sleep. So in the middle of this one day, I'm driving my kid to school, as I said, nonverbal. And to help me with the traffic, I would just put on my CD, which was my favorite CD in the world, a Ramones CD. One day I'm driving, and I hit a pothole. Back then, it caused the CD to skip in the car. This was maybe 2004, 2005.
Been there.
Right. Caused the CD to skip. And if you remember those old school CD platters, for a split second, it would go until it found its place on the CD and it continued. It was in the middle of Blitzkrieg Bop, a Ramone song. Hit it and it finished. And then all of a sudden, right in time, at the exact lyric from the back seat of the car, in the child seat, I hear the song. And I was so shocked, I slammed on the brakes. It turns out my son just started singing. It was the first real words he had ever said. And I thought it was borderline miraculous. So I hurried to the school because, like I said, I was on my way to Brooklyn. As soon as I walk in, I take the CD out of the car. I give it to his instructors and his behavioralist and his therapist. And I say, this is what happened. Here's the CD. And they were like, oh, my God, this is awesome. We're going to use this. His first words were a Ramones song. They're bopping in a straight line. Hey, ho, let's go.
Of course. Yeah.
And I mean... And then fortunately, when I had my radio show at Sirius XM, who had the studio down the hall for me? Marky Ramone. One day after his show, I caught him in the hallway. He thought I was mugging him or something. And I said, Marky, let me tell you about what happened with my son. I have to tell you because the Ramones meant so much to me growing up as a teenager. And now I feel I have this connection with my son. And I told him the story. And it turns out that he's a big contributor and advocate for autism causes. And he is a big contributor to Autism Speaks. Like he has some companies and they automatically donate a certain percentage of their profits to Autism Speaks. And that day, the next time he was in the studio, he dedicated a set and a segment to my son, which I have recorded somewhere in Shrine form. And he played my son's favorite Ramones songs that he learned and he would sing, Blitzkrieg Bop and Rockaway Beach. And those were the first words he ever said. So my son learned by listening to the same Ramones song every day and the same Ramones CD. Who would have predicted that? No one. No one would have predicted that that would have been something to help a person on the spectrum who is nonverbal. Now, it won't work for everyone. It worked for my son. And when we want him to learn something to this very day out of a habit, I will do it in a sing-song way. Get up and mow the lawn, and I'll try to put a sing-song to it because he responds to that. And like I said, fortunately, we were able to build on that. And while he's not fully verbal, he is at least able to get by in life where he can tell you what he needs and what his wants are, you know. So at least that. So that's my anecdote for people. You know, there is a human side to all this. I think a lot of times we intellectualize things or we get wrapped up in our politics. Anyway, that's my anecdote, Hody. I don't know if that helped or not, but at this point, I will say I'll let you wrap up.
Sure. Well, I'm glad we got to have this talk today. I appreciate everybody sticking with us. I know we went a little long, but I think with this one, it impacts us so personally. You know, I have friends, you have family member. I mean, this is just something that when we're talking about it, this is something that is so important to the people that we love, our loved ones in our lives, and getting them some real help. You know, I love your story, and I think it's a good one to end on because we talk about how do we get around some of these things. When we talk about autism, it's specifically either a repetitive, restrictive, or inflexible, you know, mental pattern happening, and how music might transcend that. And it seems like to me, knowing what I know about neurology and working at the hospital, that makes sense, right? Like that, it's right. Like, oh, yeah. Why didn't I think of that, right? That it won't work for everybody, but you're totally right. For some kids, that could be it, right? I mean, is there any better way to say we've got a collective issue that we need to deal with on an individual level that like screams libertarianism, right? Like that this is just we're all in a society. The only way to fix this problem, we can do it the RFK way. Collectivize, generalize, lie, make up data, blame, point fingers, shame your neighbors, point fingers, right? Like just all this division, right? Or we can get to work on individual solutions, right? Look at people, treat people as people, right? Like then we might have a collective problem, but a lot of times the solution is just person to person, right? And like we just need to get down on that, right? Wherever your neighbor's at, all these anecdotes we hear about, well, I know somebody with autism's like this. Well, I know somebody's autism's like this. They're all true.
Yes.
And it just goes to show how we need to be flexible, right, with how we deal with these things. And we need a society that's flexible and able to deal with these things. That prescribing the same thing is not going to be good for everybody, right?
Correct.
Maybe one person herbal teas really helps out a lot, right? Some people are just – we have that kind of composition in us, right? We're all just made of DNA. For some people, that's hogwash, right? That's a different kind of science.
You're right.
You know,
you're right.
Let's have the freedom to experiment. Let's embrace that freedom to experiment. Everybody, I appreciate you tuning in to the Free For All today with Hody Johns and Big John. We are very blessed to have you. We're happy to have you around. Please catch other shows. Big John, I believe you got the Liberty Lens this week. You talked about some good stuff with Mike Dermott, right?
Yeah, Mike Dermott and I on Liberty Lens. We dropped the episode yesterday. We talked about Trump versus Harvard, the Trump administration versus Harvard and what's going on there. So if you can, check that out on Liberty Lens. I'd also like to say, check out Hody and a lot of the Gridiron. I keep saying Gridiron Grumblings because that's how this company started 20 years ago. Grumblings Media, I apologize. Grumblings Media crew and other contributors, content creators, we all joined in to review the first round of the NFL draft. That's on our site if you want to check that out. Or if you happen to be more MAGA-ish, more conservative / Republican, check out my friend and partner William Del Pilar, his podcast, Fired Up. He was kind enough to give us his live stream slot today to do Free For All. But typically you'll find him at 10 p.m. Eastern right here live streaming. So everyone, at Grumblingspedia, go to any social platform. And if you'd rather go to a website, we got one of those too, grumblingspedia.com. Until next week, when hopefully you'll be here again to check us next Thursday, Big John, from my friend and partner, there he is, Hody Johns. We'll catch you next week, everyone. Peace.